On July 22, 2001, 28-year-old Nikki McCown went to do laundry in Richmond, Indiana, just a few weeks before her wedding day. After finishing her laundry, she planned to go home and work on wedding invitations, but she never made it back. The next morning, her fiancé reported her missing, and for months there was no trace of her until November, when her SUV was found abandoned in Dayton, Ohio, with her clean laundry still folded inside. Nikki was nowhere to be found. More than 20 years later, Nikki's disappearance remains unsolved. Her family is still searching, holding on to the hope that one day they will finally learn the truth and bring her home. Hey everyone, welcome back to Detective Perspective. My name is Derek Levasseur. I'm a licensed private investigator and former police detective. Each week I'll be covering an unsolved case in story format. I'll then give you my perspective on the investigation and provide contact information for the individuals or organizations connected to the case so that if you have any tips, you can contact them directly and maybe you can help solve a case. So if you're someone who's interested in true crime, specifically unsolved cases, and you would like to hear my opinion on those investigations, please consider subscribing whether you're watching on YouTube or listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever platform you use. Okay, Nikki McCown, I'm not going to spend too much time on this intro. This case is pretty cut forward. We don't know where Nikki is. We do not have a body. There are a few suspects in this case, a few people of interest, and yet we sit here 20 plus years later. We have nobody in custody, no one being held accountable for whatever happened to Nikki. Was this a homicide? Or did Nikki take off because she felt the pressures of being in a marriage that she didn't want to be in? We don't know. And then it takes an unexpected turn and you're left wondering, okay, well, where do we go now? So I want to cover everything. I want to get your opinions on it. I want to get your wheels turning. But most importantly, I want to drive attention to this case because frankly, I had never heard of it before, and I'm sure most of you never have as well. So we got to raise the attention level. We got to get people out there talking about it again, because just like with many of these cases I cover, there is someone out there that knows what happened to Nikki. We just got to get them to come forward. So I don't want to waste any more time. Let's dive into this week's case. Marilyn Nicole McCown, who went by Nikki, was born on January 6, 1973 to her parents Barbara and Harvey. She was the youngest of 10 children in a very tight-knit family. Her sister Michelle described her as a strong black woman. She was pretty and outgoing. She was also extremely intelligent and sometimes could be a daredevil. When Nikki was 19 years old, she gave birth to her daughter Peyton, great name by the way, and the father of Peyton was her boyfriend Stephen, who was in the military. And unfortunately, their relationship didn't last. By the mid-1990s, Nikki was a single mother. Peyton later told NBC, quote, "She was always smiling and laughing, looking for fun things to do. I always felt loved by her." Not long after Peyton was born, Nikki began working in the business office at the Montgomery Education and Pre-Release Center, a prison located in Dayton, Ohio. She continued working there until her disappearance. Eventually, Nikki started dating again and became engaged to Bobby Webster. They lived in Richmond, Indiana, which is about 45 minutes outside of Dayton. The couple was planning an August 18th, 2001 wedding, but tragically, Nikki would never get the chance to walk down the aisle. On July 22nd, Nikki and her fiancé Bobby attended church. According to the Indianapolis Star, after church, she dropped Bobby off at a local tuxedo shop with his best man. The plan was for her to take Bobby's car to do some laundry, and they would meet up later to finish working on their wedding invitations. Nikki went to the Richmond Coin Laundry, the same laundromat she visited every Sunday. She started her laundry, but when two Hispanic men began bothering her, she left and went to her parents' house nearby. Later, when it was time to pick up her clothes, Nikki headed out again, and that was the last time her parents saw her. Nikki never made it home to work on those wedding invitations either. Bobby became immediately concerned and called her family. And together, they went to the laundromat, but Nikki and Bobby's GMC Jimmy was gone. They did search the surrounding area, but couldn't find her or the vehicle anywhere. When Nikki didn't come home that night, it was completely out of character. The Dayton Daily News reported that she had left her thyroid medication at home, and this was alarming as she suffered from Graves' disease and would not have gone anywhere overnight without it. She had also left behind her engagement ring, but that wasn't unusual. She needed to have it resized and didn't like wearing it while doing laundry. The next morning, July 23rd, Bobby reported Nikki missing to the Richmond, Indiana police. He and her other family members then spoke to detectives, and they explained that she was well-liked and had no known enemies. The only suspicious detail they could think of was the two men that had harassed her at the laundromat the day before. At first, officers told Nikki's family that it was likely she had just gotten cold feet about the wedding and she would eventually turn up. But her family insisted that was impossible. They told investigators she wouldn't leave her daughter, and she was excited about getting married in just a few weeks. Nikki had spent a lot of time and money preparing for the wedding and was really looking forward to it. They knew in their hearts there was no way she would have left on her own. When Nikki hadn't returned after several days, the police began to take her disappearance more seriously. Detectives checked her bank accounts and phone records, but neither had been used since July 22nd. They also went to the laundromat to look for surveillance footage, and as far as we know, there wasn't any there, but there was a nearby convenience store called Village Pantry, which did have surveillance footage. The video showed Nikki at 2:17 p.m. getting changed to use at the laundromat. About 30 minutes later, at around 2:45 p.m., she was seen loading clothes in the back of her GMC. The footage showed her leaving the laundromat, quote, under no duress whatsoever. This would be the last known sighting of Nikki. At this point, based on the surveillance footage, detectives didn't believe the men at the laundromat were involved in Nikki's disappearance. Instead, they began looking at the people closest to her, including her fiancé, Bobby. On July 25th, Bobby was brought in for questioning. He explained that on the day Nikki disappeared, he and his best man went to the tuxedo shop, and then he stopped at the mall to try to upgrade Nikki's wedding band. After that, he went back to his house to work on wedding invitations. Nikki was supposed to meet him there, but she never showed up. As the interview continued, the detective asked Bobby if he thought Nikki could have left him.
Do you think she left you?
She wouldn't. I feel she wouldn't.
Okay. So that's not even a possibility in your mind?
She would not do me like this.
Okay.
I'm trying to do everything for her, man. I just can't
see. Oh, I know. I'm not saying that did, but, you know.
My family really likes me. And
listen to everything that all these people have told you. You brought it up, and now the ring was sitting there in a box. Do you think she left? Do you think that is a possibility? You say yes or no?
No, I'm going to stand by.
Okay. That's
the
fine.
Feelings, I feel that.
Because I'm just trying to get some avenue to really direct our investigation here.
During the interview, the detective kept suggesting that Nikki might have gotten cold feet about the wedding. Each time, Bobby pushed back, insisting that didn't happen. Before the interview ended, detectives also asked Bobby about her co-workers. He mentioned multiple people, including a man named Tommy Swint. Now, this name didn't mean anything to anyone at the time, but that would later change.
Tommy Swint.
Tommy?
Yeah. Another sort, he's from Dayton. He's like, I look at Dayton guys as like Playboy types. So.
Sure, and he worked over there with her.
Yeah. They were just good friends because they started around the same time. Well, okay. I think he started a little sooner, but they were already friends before I came in the picture. That's why I would assume they're good friends now. So
he's
whatever happened before I got here. I mean,
yeah,
I don't even want to.
I'm not getting into. I don't care.
This is from
all I'm caring about is finding her. That's all I care about.
As the interview wrapped up, Bobby told detectives that he was completely confused by Nikki's disappearance.
I mean, really, you could not imagine the amount of confusion I have right now. That's all it is.
Sure.
I can't cry anymore because I've done it for 3 straight days.
Yeah, we don't want to confuse you at all. We're just...
I just don't know where to turn or what. I just don't. And
we're trying to get a little bit of direction from you because you're, like Ken Powell said, is you're the closest to her. And you're the one that can direct us where we need to go. Okay? Any other males' names?
That would be it. I don't want to start naming off every guy she knows. I don't want to do that.
You wouldn't name it.
No, in its condition. A few months ago, for some school, follow up for school.
But right now, the condition it's in today, you think it could make it to Dayton and back?
I'm pretty sure it could.
Okay. Okay. Got anything else?
I just want to add, man, I just want my baby. I know after this our relationship's going to be, you know, difficult even, but it's not going to be near as difficult as what it is now. Mm-hmm. And the sooner we get back together and get this behind us, we can get married. We're going to have a wedding, man, because I still got the invitations on the table, and we still got time. We're going to get married.
You guys had no, there was no indication that she would, was hedging on this wedding, do you?
None. I mean, she had too much energy into it, too much stress to really just kind of overnight not want to do something, not want it, you know.
After that, the interview ended and Bobby was free to go. Now, I listened to the whole interview. It's about 45 minutes. I listened to it on YouTube. I believe it's under Dayton 24/7. And to me, without being there, without being able to see his visual cues that he might display during the interview based on certain questions that were being asked, it's really difficult for me to analyze it at the depth that I would like to. What I would say is that overall, I found it to be pretty on the up and up. It didn't seem like he was pausing too much to think about his answers. It felt like they were coming just from his recollection. But this interview was warranted. You have to do that. You have to start looking at the people closest to Nikki when there's nothing obvious at the laundromat. And although he's saying he's at home at the end of the evening, there's nothing to corroborate that. So is it possible at this point that Nikki does get home after picking up the laundry and something happens while they're at the residence? And then that's when Nikki disappears. And that's when Bobby reports her missing. Of course, that's in play here. And if we're starting to explore that theory, the one thing, if I'm nitpicking here, that I thought was a little odd, but could have just been Bobby's behavior, was this last quote that I played for you guys where he basically said, you know, it's going to be difficult. I'm paraphrasing here, obviously, but it's going to be difficult, but we can get past this. Wanting the interviewers, the police, and obviously anybody listening to this recording to know that he loved Nikki and he forgave her basically, and that this was going to be okay and that he was a good guy and this was all going to work out. Some people could look at that and say he knows he's being recorded and he's trying to paint the narrative that he's the victim and that worst case scenario, Nikki did get cold feet. And if she came back home, he would forgive her and they could move on from this. So if you're in the camp that he might be involved, you could see this as performative, where he's basically trying to write the narrative for not only law enforcement, but anybody who may review this footage. That was the one thing. But to me, it wasn't like overt. I'm not looking at this going, oh yeah, this guy's guilty of sin. He's definitely lying. And I have to tell you, Bobby would be at the top of my list at this point. You can't clear him. But man, we got some more people to talk about. And when we do, it's going to surprise you. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. Shopping, planning, and cooking food really can be simple and stress-free. Imagine having your weekly shopping cart filled for you and your meals for the week decided on, taking all the work off my plate is why I love Hungry Root. Hungry Root helps you eat well and reach your diet or health goals, whether that's gluten-free, dairy-free, high-protein, focused on gut health, or anything else. Just take the quiz, and their smart cart technology recommends groceries, recipes, and supplements tailored to your taste and needs. It's like having your own personal shopper and chef all in one, so you can spend less time planning and more time doing what you love. And with my offer, you'll get a free item, like a premium protein, veggie, or sweet treat in every box for life. I recently had their pesto baked salmon with the veggies. Absolutely delicious. It was like I was eating it from a restaurant. They also have a ton of snack options in every box, which I'm a snacker, so I love that. I love their beef stick. I always take that when I'm traveling. It's like a healthier option of a beef stick, which I really enjoy. They also have their little like cookies, and they have their chickpea cookie dough, which I've talked about before. Absolutely love their food. And what I really enjoy is it's mostly things that I've never seen before. So that's cool to get a little surprise in every box. And Hungry Root holds all of its food to high standards, screening out over 200 additives, including high fructose corn syrup, artificial sweeteners, and preservatives. They source only high quality meat and seafood with no hormones or antibiotics, offer organic produce and non-GMO options, and carry trusted healthy brands like Oatly, Vital Farms, Ithaca Hummus, Harmless Harvest, and many more. So take advantage of this exclusive offer. For a limited time, you can get 40% off your first box, plus get a free item in every box for life. All you have to do is go to hungryroot.com/detective and use my code detective. That's hungryroot.com/detective, code detective, to get 40% off your first box, plus a free item of your choice for life. One more time, that's hungryroot.com/detective, code detective. Okay, we're back. And on July 29th, the Sunday after Nikki was last seen, detectives went back to the laundromat to speak with people who had been there the same day she disappeared. Numerous witnesses recalled seeing her, but no one reported anything suspicious. This only strengthened detectives' gut feeling that the laundromat wasn't tied to Nikki's disappearance. With little else to go on, investigators began to focus more closely on Bobby, and it wasn't long before the red flags started piling up. You see, detectives learned that Bobby had canceled the wedding instead of postponing it in case Nikki came back, and he worked to recover as many of the deposits as he could. Around that same time, he also attempted to return his wedding band. But the manager refused since the receipt listed Nikki's name, not his, and the situation grew heated, and Bobby ultimately had to be escorted out of the store. According to Unsolved Mysteries, detectives brought Bobby in again to ask him about his behavior, and he explained that he was trying to raise money to help fund the search for Nikki. He hadn't worked since she disappeared, and they needed money for flyers. He also wanted a cell phone to help with the search. Bobby told detectives that his wedding no longer mattered. What mattered was Nikki's well-being. Detectives were not buying it, so they asked Bobby to take a polygraph, and at first, he refused, but later he agreed. According to detectives, he failed that exam. But Bobby has publicly disputed that, saying that he and his attorney never saw the results. He also said that he asked detectives to send the report to his lawyer, but they refused to do so. And I don't really understand why. I know it's an open investigation, but you asked him to take the polygraph test. It was voluntary. You can send it to him. You can show him where he showed signs of deception. If he's lying, it's not going to help him. He obviously tried to pass it the first time. And so, yeah, he's not going to really be able to do anything differently. All it's going to show him is that, yeah, you did fail. So if you're telling the truth, there's something going on here. You maybe got to calm down, relax a little bit more during the questioning. Or if you're lying, this isn't going to help your case down the road. So either way, they brought him in multiple times. They're already considering him at minimum a person of interest. I think everybody would assume that much. So I don't really see the reason why you wouldn't send him the results. I personally, if I was working the case, I would have sent it to him because they've already put out publicly that he failed it. Here's the proof, Bobby. Go ahead and show it to everyone. All it's going to prove is that we're telling the truth. I think the decision to not send in the results actually hurts law enforcement because it looks like they're hiding something. If you want to create this level of trust within the community, be transparent as much as you can. If Bobby wants to see the results, well, here you go. But by the way, Bobby, we're going to send them to you and we're going to send them to the media. If we're disputing this publicly, let's just put it all to rest. Now, as you can imagine, detectives felt like Bobby potentially was involved in Nikki's disappearance. However, there was no conclusive evidence tying him to anything, so the investigation moved forward with detectives focusing on Nikki's ex-boyfriend, Steven, as well. Again, they may think Bobby's involved, but you don't want to get tunnel vision. You have to explore all scenarios, so I like that they're going down the list looking at different persons of interest. Now, Steven was described as, quote, very cooperative. He told police that he had been at work at the time Nikki was reported missing, and that was confirmed. He also gave DNA and fingerprints and took a polygraph, which he passed. So based on all that information, Steven was cleared as a suspect, and the investigation dragged on with few developments until November 3rd, more than 3 months after Nikki vanished. That's when Bobby's GMC was found in the parking lot of Meadow of Catalpa, a large apartment complex in Dayton, Ohio. And I do want to apologize. I looked for it. I'm hoping I'm saying that right. It's spelled C-A-T-A-L-P-A. I try to get all the names right in these cases. I apologize if I got that one wrong. I may have butchered it, but I'm going with my best guess here. According to Unsolved Mysteries, the car door was ajar. Inside, there were no signs of violence. Nikki's clean laundry was still neatly folded in the back seat, but the vehicle had clearly been tampered with. The battery was missing. The door lock had been knocked in, the ignition had been damaged, and the stereo system was gone. Unfortunately, there were no fingerprints or other evidence. Now, I do want to point out here that although I'm describing the vehicle in this way, the condition of the truck could be completely separate from what actually happened to Nikki. we could have a vehicle that was dumped at this location, which is part of a homicide or an abduction. And the damage that I'm describing as far as the ignition, the door, the stereo being gone, that could all be a separate crime where the vehicle being left there for multiple days, some other criminal not connected to Nikki's disappearance may have said, hey, I don't think anybody's coming back for this vehicle. I'm going to take what I can from the inside. So I wouldn't necessarily tie the ignition and the stereo system being damaged or missing to Nikki's disappearance. If I had to give an educated guess, I would say that the vehicle had been vandalized after the vehicle was dumped and that the two are not connected in any way, shape, or form. Unless you want to explore the potential scenario that whoever dumped the vehicle there damaged the car in this way to make it look like a vandalism. But I don't know how that would increase or I guess separate them from the crime itself. I think most investigators would look at this depending on that area and depending on the type of crime that occurs there and come to the same conclusion that I just came to. The vehicle was dumped and it was there for approximately 3 months, and eventually it became a target for theft and vandalism. Now, after locating the vehicle, detectives searched the complex and the nearby woods for 2 days, hoping to find other evidence, but they didn't find anything of value. They also canvassed the complex and learned that residents had seen the GMC parked there since August or September, though it had been moved during those months, according to these witnesses. You know how I feel about witnesses. You want to believe everything they say. I find it hard to believe that this vehicle had been moved multiple times. That would suggest that Nikki had been using the vehicle. And if that were the case, why was the folded laundry still inside? If she was alive and in possession of her car, she probably would have needed her clothes. And she definitely wouldn't have just left them in the back seat. So to me, the GMC being at that location, my best guess that within the days of her disappearance, that vehicle was dumped there. And that's why the laundry was still in the back seat. I know witnesses said the vehicle was moved. The only thing I could think of is the ignition being popped. You could have had someone take the vehicle for a joyride, but in my experience, they usually don't bring it back to the scene of the crime. So I'm a little skeptical about the vehicle being moved. I think they could be getting that fact wrong, but I at least wanted to put it out to you guys. And if you have a different opinion or a different theory on what that might indicate, I'd love to hear it. And I will say this, these neighbors were pretty helpful because they didn't just discuss the GMC. Detectives also discovered through talking to different people that Nikki had actually lived at the complex years earlier in a different section. She had actually shared an apartment there with Steven, her ex-boyfriend, who still lived at that property. The fact that Nikki's car was found at Steven's apartment complex made no sense. On the day Nikki disappeared, their daughter Peyton had been staying with her grandmother, and that meant that there was no reason for Nikki to have gone to Steven's apartment. On top of that, Steven had been at work and his alibi had already been verified, which I talked about earlier, so we know for a fact that he wasn't there either. All of this led detectives to still believe he wasn't involved. And I have to agree, this is too obvious to me. If Steven was involved, he wouldn't have left the vehicle at that location. It would clearly point to him. So why was the car there? I'm going to talk about that in the perspective because there are a couple scenarios here to me that would make sense. So detectives, they kept digging and they were trying to figure out how Nikki had ended up in Dayton. And they discovered that on the day she disappeared, Nikki had made a phone call to a coworker who lived about a mile away from the apartment complex. According to WTHR, detectives went to speak with this coworker and she admitted to speaking to Nikki on that day. She said that they had chatted about specialty hair and nail products she could buy at a Dayton store. She also claimed that Nikki mentioned she was going to pick up vitamins at a nearby pharmacy. This whole situation is very odd to me because I think it's safe to assume that this coworker, by this point, would have known that Nikki had been reported missing. And I would also think that at this point, she would have known around the time she allegedly went missing. And you would think a reasonable person would say, man, I must have been one of the last people to speak with her. Do you think that if you deduced that from the information that was provided publicly, you might have contacted law enforcement? Maybe said, hey, just a heads up, I talked to her on the day she went missing or around the time she went missing. She was in the Dayton area. Maybe you want to look there, just trying to help. And yet this person never came forward. They never provided these details until law enforcement was able to look at Nikki's phone records and identify her phone number. That was the only time that she finally said, "Hey, yeah, I acknowledge I spoke to her. This is what we talked about." And unfortunately, we're only getting one side of the story. So because she didn't come forward, I think it's only natural to question, is that what they actually talked about? I also want to note that this coworker has never been publicly identified. So we're going to talk about this again a little bit later in this episode, but I think the fact that she's never been publicly identified, it could be just for privacy reasons, or it could be because she's a person of interest. And I think based on this behavior, if she was put in that category, I wouldn't be opposed to it. I'll just say that. Moving forward a little bit, there were a few updates in the case until July of 2002, 1 year after Nikki disappeared. At that time, detectives acknowledged that Bobby would probably always be a person of interest until Nikki was either located or until they had evidence to completely clear him. And that's just the way it goes. However, they also said they were beginning to focus more on two people in Dayton who had worked with Nikki at the prison. Detectives didn't release their names or provide any details, but they made it very clear that they felt strongly about their involvement. They also stated that they believed that Nikki had more than likely been met with foul play after driving to Dayton, and that at this point, she was deceased. But unfortunately, after this, Nikki's case stopped getting as much media attention, which tends to happen when law enforcement or even content creators come to the conclusion that the victim is no longer with us. This is just a psychological thing that happens where the listeners or viewers or the community feels, okay, well, if law enforcement believes she's dead, then what can we do? And that's the wrong train of thought, because even if the victim is dead, that means someone's responsible for their death. So at minimum, we have to find that person so they can be held accountable. But even more importantly, if you want to look at it from a selfish perspective, this same individual, this attacker who carried out this crime, could also carry out a similar crime against you or someone you care about. So if you're from that community and their law enforcement is acknowledging that this monster is out there still walking the streets, you should be even more incentivized to get involved. But yes, that is a more centralized, local focused train of thought. If you're someone across the country, you may not be as motivated to be involved, which is why you have to be very careful when you put a bookend on these stories without knowing definitively what happened. And that's why I always like to give percentages, give an opinion, but not make it as finite as this. Because when you do that, it's a slippery slope and it could actually hurt the case more than help it. And that's exactly what it looked like. From the outside, it seemed like nothing was happening. But we know now that behind the scenes, detectives were quietly focusing on one of Nikki's coworkers from the prison. And his name was Tommy Swin, who, as I mentioned earlier, Bobby put on law enforcement's radar during his interview. Okay, so let's talk about Tommy. He was a former Marine who had been discharged after going AWOL. He started at the prison in 1994, the same year as Nikki, and the two became close. Nikki's sister Michelle told WTHR that the relationship was mostly platonic, but it had crossed into a sexual relationship on more than one occasion. Tommy would take Nikki out to eat, buy her things, and give her money, and Michelle believed that Tommy wanted a serious relationship, but Nikki didn't. She wanted to be with Bobby, who had no idea about the true nature of her relationship with Tommy. Michelle also revealed that on the day Nikki disappeared, Nikki had tried to contact her multiple times. Now, Michelle believes Nikki was trying to tell her something about Tommy, and she explained that Tommy had been, quote, aggressive toward Nikki on numerous occasions. Michelle also told WTHR that the same female coworker Nikki had called on the day she disappeared, the same woman who had said they had talked about hair and nail products, was also having an affair with Tommy. If I had to guess, this woman is the second person of interest that detectives mentioned in their statement. They have never revealed who the second person is or even what the gender might be. What they have said is that they believe a female coworker has information but has been reluctant to speak to police. Now, based on those context clues, it seems likely that the second person of interest is the woman that Nikki spoke to on the day she disappeared. I would think that most of you are going to agree with me on that. Okay, so back to Tommy, who we know for sure is a person of interest. According to Nikki's family, due to his secret relationship with Nikki, Tommy had been considered a person of interest from almost the very beginning. Detectives tried to speak with him, but he refused. And they didn't have enough evidence to arrest him, but they continued to keep a close eye on him for years. And as they continued to follow him, they learned some startling news about a new career that he's involved in. We're going to talk about it right after this break. Delete Me makes it easy, quick, and safe to remove your personal data online at a time when surveillance and data breaches are common enough to make everyone vulnerable. With the advancements in science and technology, it's easier than ever to find personal information about people online. Having your address, phone number, and family members' names just hanging out on the internet can have actual consequences in the real world and makes everyone susceptible to crimes like identity theft. More and more, online partisans and nefarious actors will find this data and use it to target their political rivals, civil servants, and even outspoken citizens just posting their opinions online. With Delete Me, you can protect your personal privacy or the privacy of your business from doxing attacks before sensitive information can be exploited. And this is one of the many reasons that the New York Times Wirecutter named Delete Me their top pick for data removal services. I talk to you guys about this all the time. It feels like every day now. I'm getting emails and text messages, and I have to constantly Google, hey, is this real? And 99.9% of the time, it's a scam. And if you click on it, you're done. So someone like me, especially someone who exists online publicly, I have to be hyper aware of safety and security. And that's no different for anybody who's not publicly online. If you're out there and you're clicking these things, your personal data has been leaked and someone out there could use it to hurt you or someone you love. So take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me. Now at a special discount for my listeners and viewers, you can get 20% off your Delete Me plan by texting DETECTIVE to 64000. That's 64000. And the only way to get that 20% off is to text DETECTIVE to 64000. One more time, that's DETECTIVE to 64000. Message and data rates may apply. Okay, we're back, and before break, I had mentioned that although law enforcement didn't have enough to arrest Tommy, they kept a close eye on him. They were monitoring and they were surveilling him. Then, in July of 2007, 6 years after Nikki disappeared, Richmond detectives were shocked to learn that Tommy had been sworn in as a police officer in Trotwood, a suburb of Dayton. Now, when they heard the news, one of the Richmond detectives called Trotwood police and told them that Tommy had been looked into as a possible suspect in Nikki's disappearance. When presented with this information, officials in Trotwood had no idea about any of this because Tommy had not disclosed this information. But this wasn't the type of situation where Tommy would have had no idea that he was a person of interest. He absolutely knew that detectives had tried to speak with him on multiple occasions, and he refused. So I think it's reasonable to assume that at this point, by not speaking with them, at minimum, he would be a person of interest. And obviously, he deliberately left this information out during his application process with Trotwood. So Trotwood officials confronted Tommy, who was still on a probationary period with the department, and they gave him a choice: resign or be terminated. Tommy chose to resign. So obviously, Trotwood made the right decision here. They learned about the information. They course corrected as fast as they could. So I give him credit for that. However, I am someone who conducted multiple background checks for new applicants on my police department. And I got to tell you, whoever did the background check on Tommy, at minimum, was suspended, potentially let go of. I mean, honestly, this is an egregious mistake. And if you're looking into Tommy, what you should be doing is also going to surrounding agencies and seeing if they have anything in their internal database. Now, you could make an argument for whoever this investigator was that because this information wasn't public, even if they had reached out to the police department, it may have not been disclosed to them. So as this person's boss, I would be looking to see if they did that and if at this point Richmond just didn't disclose that information. However, I strongly believe that if this investigator who was looking into Tommy's background for this application process had reached out to Richmond and said, hey, we're looking at this guy as a potential hire, as a professional courtesy, someone from Richmond police would have got on the phone and said, hey, off record, yeah, this guy might be looking at a potential murder. So maybe you don't want to hire him. So I feel like more could have been done here, and I try to hold the police accountable when I can. This was a lapse in judgment. As investigators conducting these backgrounds, we got to make sure we're hiring the right people. And it is impossible at certain points to vet out everybody. But when someone's actively being investigated for potential murder, you have to have people in place that can detect that information and make sure that they don't slip through the cracks and get this crazy amount of power to take away other people's freedom and to also put a gun in their hands. It's pretty scary to think about. And unfortunately, if I'm being honest with you here, there's probably a lot of Tommies out there that have slipped through the cracks and now have a badge. I believe most police officers are good. There's over 1 million men and women serving this country. But I would be a liar if I sat here and told you that there are people on the job right now who are not in the position that they should be and should be nowhere near a police department. I point this out because I'm someone that's trying to make things better. And although this was a long time ago, it's still happening to this day. And we gotta bring it up. We gotta raise awareness for it because we have to do a better job. This is one of those instances. All right, so back to the case here, because that's what we're here for. Within weeks of Tommy resigning, the Dayton Daily News reported that a Trotwood officer had resigned after failing to disclose he was a suspect in Nikki's disappearance. Now, this was the first time the public learned Tommy's name in connection to the case. He came out and publicly denied knowing that he was a person of interest and said he had nothing to do with Nikki's disappearance. He later tried to sue the Richmond police, but they were able to prove that he knew, at minimum, he was a person of interest, and that lawsuit was thrown out. So the investigation continued, and detectives eventually received a tip from a confidential informant who told them to look into Tommy for murder, but it wasn't Nikki's. See, this tip came in, and the confidential informant told them to look at the murder of Tina Marie Ivory, who had been found dead in December of 1991, a full decade before Nikki disappeared. Tina was a sex worker who had been beaten, strangled, and wrapped in a quilt that was secured with tape, and she was left beside a trash heap. There was DNA evidence in the case, but for years, there had been no leads, not until this confidential informant came forward. The Dayton Daily News reported that detectives began digging deeper into Tommy's past. They interviewed friends and family members and learned that Tommy had a history of seeking out sex workers. Witnesses were able to tie him to the quilt that had been used to wrap Tina's body, and forensic testing revealed even more. You see, Tommy couldn't be excluded from a bloodstain that was found on the quilt, and his fingerprints were found on the tape. But when detectives confronted him about all of this, he denied knowing anything about Tina. On February 3rd, 2010, a grand jury indicted Tommy on charges for Tina's murder. But as officers approached his house to arrest him, Tommy took his own life. Nikki's family was absolutely devastated. It felt like the only solid lead they had was suddenly gone, and detectives seemed to feel the same way. By this point, they believed Tommy was likely responsible for Nikki's disappearance, and yet they couldn't go forward with the case now because he was dead. One detective told NBC, quote, "He didn't really have any concrete alibis. There's complaints about Tommy almost everywhere you look, sexually harassing women and problems of that nature at work." After Tommy's death, there were few developments in Nikki's case, but there were more tragedies. In July of 2020, Nikki's mother, Barbara, died just one day before the 19th anniversary of her daughter's disappearance. By that time, Nikki's father, Harvey, had already passed away, meaning both parents died without knowing what happened to their youngest child. Then in March of 2021, Bobby passed away at the age of 51, so now, four of the closest people in the world to Nikki were deceased, making the investigation even that much harder. The most recent update we have in Nikki's case came in 2024, when detectives told NBC that their investigation is still open and active. They say they continue searching areas for Nikki's remains and are watching advances in technology to see what else can be tested. One detective explained, quote, "The hard part is, we don't know what happened. We don't have a body, we don't have evidence. We're going to continue to follow up on leads and just hope that at some point, if there is someone out there who has information on the case, that someone comes forward." Detectives also wanted to point out that Bobby is no longer considered a person of interest. However, Tommy remains one. Even so, Nikki's family has said they aren't completely certain that he was involved. They believe it's possible, but without finding Nikki, they can't be sure. Nikki's sister Michelle said she continues to hold on to the hope that her sister will be found. She said, quote, "I still have hope. And I would like to say if Nikki is out there, don't give up. Your family is going to bring you home." All right, let's dive into this perspective. And I want to start with one of the things I said I would elaborate on in the middle of the episode, which is the location of Nikki's GMC vehicle. I know it was found at Steven's apartment complex. And as I said in the episode, that's too obvious to me. I think because of that, Steven is essentially ruled out. Yes, you can't say with 100% certainty, but highly unlikely. So what does this location mean? To me, it's one of two things. The first one is it was a deliberate red herring. Someone put the vehicle there knowing that Nikki had used to live there and that Steven was there as well, and considered the possibility that if her vehicle had been found there, law enforcement would look at Steven as a potential suspect. Well, if that's the case, what does this mean about our suspect? It means they knew Nikki personally. Only someone who had a previous knowledge of Nikki's past would know that, one, she had lived at that complex, and two, someone that she had a relationship with, Steven, her ex-boyfriend, who they also had a child together, still lived at that complex. This means that it's not just some random person who saw Nikki traveling around the laundromat or driving to a different location and said, hey, I'm going to attack this person without knowing who they were. That's one angle. The second angle, which to me is more likely, is the laundromat is not connected to Nikki's disappearance at all, as some people have already deduced. I think that Nikki did not go home after the laundromat. Where she exactly went, I can't tell you. And this isn't to paint a negative picture of Nikki in any way, shape, or form. We're here to find out what happened to her, so we have to be honest. We know that Nikki had a sexual relationship at certain points with Tommy. So she wasn't always being truthful. And you have to ask yourself, when those occurrences took place, how did Nikki and Tommy facilitate it? I'm assuming that there were some lies and some deception going on so that Bobby wouldn't figure out what was happening. So one of the possibilities I'm looking at is if Nikki had planned on meeting up with Tommy after the laundromat, she may have parked her vehicle at the complex. So if by chance Bobby drove by or someone saw the vehicle, she could make the excuse that, oh, I went there to see Steven because I had to talk about Peyton or whatever. Something she could have made up where it wouldn't be unreasonable for her vehicle to have been seen at that location, which would also explain why it was there for so long. She probably went right from the laundromat to this apartment complex, which would also explain why the folded laundry was still inside the vehicle. So at that point, if it's not Steven, who would it be? In this scenario, it would be Tommy. Maybe they had made plans to meet up. They meet up at this location. Tommy picks her up and they go somewhere else. And whatever happens at that point takes place. More than likely, what we're talking about here is Tommy killing Nikki. I don't think she ran away, by the way. I don't think she got cold feet and just took off. None of it makes sense. None of the evidence supports it. I agree with law enforcement. More than likely, Nikki was met with foul play. We just have to figure out who did it. And when we're talking about who did it and we're talking about potential suspects, we have to talk about Tommy. He had a history of violence. More than likely, it looks like he was good for the previous murder of Tina. And we also know that he wasn't cooperative with law enforcement in regards to Nikki's case. None of this is concrete to say that he was involved in her murder, but it doesn't look good for him. And the fact that he took his own life, yes, you could argue that it's specifically tied to Tina's murder. I would push back and say more than likely it's tied to multiple murders. He was involved with a lot of sex workers, allegedly. And this might have been a pattern of behavior where if we had more time and more information and a chance to talk to Tommy, we may have tied him to multiple murders. We could be talking about a potential serial killer. And when you really dive into it and you think about Tommy's chosen profession, law enforcement, that would be the perfect disguise, right? You're in a position of authority. You can lower the guards of the people that you encounter. It would allow you to gather information using the tools and technology that law enforcement has provided to really up your game and also learn how to better protect yourself and insulate yourself from possible apprehension later. Because now you know the tricks of the trade. You know how investigations work. You know how police conduct their tactics to figure out who the bad guys are. So if you're someone who wants to be involved in more crime, what better position to be in than the person investigating those crimes? So that's Tommy. But I don't want to get tunnel vision on Tommy because it's also possible there was someone else in Nikki's life, potentially this female coworker or someone else that hasn't been identified publicly, who Nikki had a relationship with. Was it platonic? Was it romantic? I don't know. But that's why law enforcement has to look into every aspect of Nikki's life to narrow down the pool of people she could have met up with that day, because I firmly believe that's what happened. She was at this location. She met up with someone that she knew she was going to meet up with. She probably didn't intend on being with this person for an extended period of time. And her overall plan was to meet up with this person, do whatever they were going to do or talk about whatever they were going to talk about, and then make it home in time to work on these wedding invitations. Obviously, that's not what happened or we wouldn't be sitting here right now. But that's where I'm looking at. Like, who else could be in her world that maybe her close friends and family weren't aware of? That's definitely something that has to be explored thoroughly. I also want to go back to Bobby. I know law enforcement has come out and said that he is no longer a person of interest. I know he's no longer with us, so I never want to disrespect someone after they're gone and not here to defend themselves. But I do wonder if law enforcement would have come out and cleared Bobby if he were still alive. How is it impossible, as I sit here right now, that Nikki did make it home? And maybe Bobby had discovered something. Maybe he figured out that she was having a relationship with Tommy. And things escalated. They got out of control, and something happened to Nikki. When I talked to you earlier about where her vehicle was found, it would have had to have been someone who knew Nikki as a person and would know areas that she would frequent. Bobby would be one of those people. So I would really like to know what exculpatory evidence law enforcement has to say definitively Bobby is no longer a person of interest. If they have it, great. I'd gladly put it out right here. But based on where I'm sitting right now, although I do think Tommy is the main suspect in this case, I would still have Bobby on the list, maybe near the bottom, but still on the list, as well as this female coworker and anybody else who didn't come forward at the time when Nikki disappeared. So where does that leave us? Well, we have one person of interest who has never been publicly identified. We have one suspect who has taken their own life. And we have another person of interest, in my opinion, who is also deceased. That means we need someone else to come forward. Whether that links to someone who is deceased or someone else that we haven't identified yet, I strongly believe that there's someone out there who has a piece of this puzzle that may get this case going again. Maybe new information leads to a person that has never been identified before. Why is that so important? Well, reading between the lines here, if you picked up on what the detective said in their statement, they're keeping an eye on advances in technology to see what can be tested. What do they have? Do they have something right now that can be tested? And are they potentially looking for a person to test it against? I don't have the answers to these questions, but I do know one thing. It's not going to go anywhere if nobody speaks up, which after reading this case is why I decided to cover it. We need to get this information out there. Yes, it's an old case, 20 plus years, but we've solved older and we can do more in this investigation. And law enforcement has said right out, they need your help. So I'm really hoping that after hearing or seeing this case, someone decides to come forward, because Nikki still has family and friends out there that are looking for answers. And if for no other reason at all, if we're able to find this person and clear other people like Bobby, that's important as well. So just to recap, 28-year-old Marilyn Nikki McCown was last seen on July 22, 2001, doing laundry in Richmond, Indiana. She never returned home. The next morning, her fiancé reported her missing. Months later, her SUV was found abandoned in Dayton, Ohio, with her clean laundry still folded inside. Nikki was nowhere to be found. At the time of her disappearance, Nikki was 5'3 and weighed approximately 115 pounds. She was last seen wearing a dark-colored swimsuit top, biker shorts, and sandals. If anyone has information about Nikki's case, please call the Richmond Police Department at 765-983-7247. My final words, as always, go out to Nikki's friends and family, specifically Michelle, her sister. I know you're out there fighting for her. I know you want to bring her home. We want that as well. And I know we didn't get to work together on this case, but I'm hoping I did it justice. I'm hoping all the facts are correct. And if you see this and you have anything you'd like to add, please reach out. I would be glad to do so. We're going to keep fighting for you. We're going to keep fighting for your family. Most importantly, we're going to keep fighting for Nikki. I hope I get the opportunity to share with everyone here that Nikki has been found. And if the person is still out there who is responsible for whatever happened to her, they're going to be held accountable. Until that day comes, everyone stay safe out there, and I'll see you soon.